Hi. So the title of my study today is Examining the Relationship Between Social Integration and Neighborhood Poverty, and it's an analysis of the NHANES 3. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, one of whom's in the back of the room back there, Marian Passananti. And also I want to say thank you to the Research Data Center at the National Center for Health Statistics for their help in putting this together as well. Oh, I'm sorry. Ooh, sorry. Thank you. I don't have any relationships to disclose. And this is an overview, which you'll see in a minute anyway. Okay, so social integration is a quantitative measure of social relationships that's used in population-based epi studies. It is intended to measure how enmeshed individuals are within their social lives, and it has been shown to have associations with physical and mental health. It also has been shown to have an inverse relationship with mortality in many population-based studies. Neighborhoods are, as we heard in the previous presentation, an important predictor of health as well. Neighborhoods are the geographic areas within which individuals reside, and they have been hypothesized to influence health in a variety of ways, such as shaping access to resources, environmental exposures, and also types of social relationships that they encourage. And also, so neighborhood socioeconomic condition, similar to social integration, has been shown to have a very strong relationship with health outcomes and an inverse relationship with mortality. So interestingly, although we know a lot about these two social determinants individually, there hasn't been much research, especially in the epidemiological literature, looking at the role of neighborhood context in actually shaping social integration. There has been some work done in sociology in this area, particularly in urban areas, but they really look at kind of distinct concepts such as social cohesion and collective efficacy, which are kind of how the neighborhood acts on these individual relationships. So, but we're going to be looking at the individual relationships themselves using measures that were proposed by Bergman and her colleagues and are commonly used in the epi literature. So today's talk is actually part of a larger study that that we did, which sought to examine if neighborhoods modify the association between social integration and health. And so I'm just kind of reporting on a small piece of that today. The goals of this study were to assess if neighborhood socioeconomic context is associated with social integration overall, so general types of integrations with family and friends. And then we also sought to look to see if neighborhood condition was associated specifically with social integration with neighbors. We used the third National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, which is was conducted between 1988 and 1994. And we used a specific file that was geocoded to census tracts. And then we matched those census tracts to data from the 1990 census to provide the geographic level information. We actually used a variable that was created by the Harvard School of Public Health's Public Health Disparities Geocoding Project, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. So this variable that we used measures the percent of the residents within each census tract that live below the poverty line. Like in the last study, we defined high poverty as those areas with greater than 20% of the residents living below poverty. And this was our main independent variable in the study, and we used four levels. To measure social integration, We use a modified version of the social network index, which was previously reported in a paper by Ford and colleagues using NHANES 3 data. There's a possible score between 0 and 4 assigned to each respondent based on these measures. So we looked at whether or not the individual was married, had many contacts with friends and family in each year, attended religious services, members in voluntary organizations. And so the social integration was then collapsed into a dichotomous variable looking at low versus high. To measure social integration with neighbors, we specifically looked at how many visits were reported per year by the respondent with their neighbors. And this was actually interestingly distributed within the data set, where almost 40% of the individuals reported having never visited with their neighbors. And so we ended up collapsing this into a dichotomous variable as well, where low was never and low and high is greater than 52 visits per year, which is comes out to about one visit a week. We use a simple list of confounding factors. These are things that are well known to be associated with social integration and with neighborhood poverty and with health as well. And specifically, we use these two variables of poverty income ratio and years of education to account for individual level socioeconomic status. So I'm just going to kind of breeze over these. But we did incorporate the complex survey design of NHANES in our statistical analysis using Sudan. And I'm going to just be reporting the multivariable logistic regression models today, which we developed using a generalized estimating approach, which accounted for the primary sampling units. So we had human subjects approval both by the National Center for Health Statistics, and we analyzed the data within their protocol, and also the UMDNJ, which is now Rutgers Institutional Review Board. So the final analytical sample had 16,044 individuals. It started out over 30,000, but we did exclusions. It only included respondents who were over the age of 17, who were able to be geocoded, and also who lived in their neighborhood of residence for over a year. We felt that it was important that there be a substantial base level exposure to the neighborhood, since that was our main interest. And then this is the distribution of the neighborhood poverty variable. So you can see 19% of the sample lived in the highest poverty areas, and about 30% lived in the most affluent areas. This is just to kind of show, I did this with a couple of the variables to show you how neighborhood poverty was associated with the confounding factors that we looked at for individual levels SES. And you can see that, in fact, so the first bar shows the total sample, and then the successive bars are each of the categories of neighborhood poverty. And you can see the association with this is years of education. And here, too, I did the same thing to show you the relationship between neighborhood poverty and individual socioeconomic status. So the poverty income ratio shows which individuals live in households either above or below the poverty line. And you can see here too, I mean, this is as expected, obviously, that the highest poverty neighborhoods would have the most people living within households below the poverty line. So these are actually the results from the first set of logistic regression models. These are the ones looking at neighborhood poverty as a predictor of low social integration. Model 1 is the unadjusted model, and Model 2 accounts for the confounding variables that I mentioned before. You can see actually in both models there's a strong relationship between neighborhood poverty and having low social integration. The highest in the unadjusted model, we have an odds ratio of 2, and even once we account for the confounding factors, we still have a 43% increased odds in the highest poverty area when compared to the most affluent areas. So that's attenuated when you account for the confounding factors, as would be expected. However, it's still a strong relationship that is present. So this is a second set of models that I wanted to show today. And this is looking at the predictor of low visits of neighborhood. And you can see what's interesting here is that it's the opposite results of what we saw in the last set of models. So those people living in the highest poverty areas are more likely to visit with their neighbors than their counterparts in the most affluent areas. And this relationship really stays the same even once accounting for the confounding factors. So why is this important? I believe that this really just adds to the literature in at least two ways. We gave you a direct examination of the role of neighborhood poverty in shaping social integration, and we were able to distinguish between general types of social integrations and social integrations with neighbors. So those interactions that you would expect to be more directly affected by the geographic area. We also provide evidence of this upstream cause of social integration, which has been theorized about in the literature. And we give evidence that neighborhood poverty does structure the extent and type of social integration, which has been shown to have important health effects. In terms of how can this be applied, I think keeping this in mind in future research, and also seeing that providing interventions at the neighborhood level could have an impact on social relationships and then on health. So we do have limitations. The use of census tracts as a proxy for neighborhood is definitely inexact. It doesn't provide information about a person's individual experience of their neighborhood, so we do acknowledge that. The measurement of social integration without consideration of the relative importance of different types of contacts over others, I think, would be something I would like to be able to do in the future. And then the cross-sectional measurement of both of our main effects, actually. It doesn't take into account any kind of life course effect. However, we have a lot of strengths of the study as well. This is a large national probability sample. Similar types of studies of this, looking at this relationship, have been done on very localized populations. We use an applied measure of epidemiologic measure of social integration, which is widely used in public health research, so we can compare our results to those of other researchers. We gave consideration to the local neighborhood context as a different type of social relationship, which I think we found that they most likely are. And that too has been looked at in the sociological literature that possibly people who live in higher poverty areas would be more reliant on their neighbors for day-to-day assistance and support as opposed to their families or people who are outside of that area. And we also showed that this kind of simple classification of neighborhood socioeconomic condition was significantly associated with the extent of social integration. So while it would be really wonderful to be able to more thoroughly measure this effect, it can't always be done, but that doesn't mean that we still can't take a look at what's going on. So that's it. Thanks. Okay, does anybody have questions? Ooh, yeah. Thank you. Okay, thanks for that question. I don't really know. I'm sorry. She asked about the fact that we looked at different types of social relationships and that the outcomes were slightly different than we imagine that they may be, and so how might those different types of social outcomes be affecting health, right? Okay. So, you know, I think it's interesting. I think that, you know, in the kind of theory of how social relationships impact health, you have along that line different types of health behaviors that could be shaped by different types of social contacts and interactions and, you know, peer relations and that kind of thing. So, you know, and I also, there's a bunch of information in the psychological and sociological literature looking at how people with less resources have less to give, and so maybe, you know, more contacts with neighbors in a low poverty area may not be able to have that kind of supportive effect on health that people with more resources might be able to provide. That's just kind of like my working thoughts about it. Obviously, not a lot of us known, so.
No.
Yeah, so the study as a whole, we actually looked at mortality. And so that is why we used the Ann-Haynes 3, which seems kind of old-ish data. But we were able to link that to mortality follow-up, which in the later studies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say, excuse me? Could you say I measured social capital? I guess it would depend on how you defined it particularly. So I think that some of the things are similar. I've seen social capital measured in neighborhood studies more broadly, and how many social resources the neighborhoods have, as opposed to this is really looking at the resources of the individual people. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Also from New Jersey. I teach at Rutgers School of Nursing.
Oh, hi.
We have. I'm a health officer in. West New York, New Jersey. But one of the things that I've noticed, even though Hoboken is close to West New York, New Jersey, mm-hmm. there's a huge gentrification that took place in Hoboken, where you have tons of people from New York City looking at the view from Hoboken from their windows. And then you go within the city a couple of blocks and you have the project out there. So apparently, a long time ago, the mayor, it's some problem, all the housing that was available to the Puerto Ricans who lived there burned down. Like the whole city was on fire. And when they rebuilt it, they rebuilt it with only moving in people, upper class people, and the rent went through the roof. So when I look at that, I see that the people who were poorer were pushed to the back of the community in these off streets. But I still find that there's a huge connection. These people have a huge connection with one another. And in fact, I believe that the only people who sustain that hospital, if it's sustainable, St. Mary's in Hoboken, which is now Hoboken University Hospital, attached to no university at all, but it's actually there to help the people of the community, because people who have good income sources, great payer sources, great insurance, go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
They think the path train go to New York. So I do believe that these social networks that they have does decrease mortality. While I don't think they have the same educational savvy or knowledge to engage in or to understand the medical processes that go on. But I do think that they visit each other a lot more than once a year. I find that there's a tremendous social integration, but more so within their community as opposed to the upper scale Hoboken.
Right. Thank you. Yes.
I have two questions. I was kind of curious, one, how you measured contact, and if that, especially today, included internet contact and Facebook, email, Twitter,
Yeah.
And two, whether or not you saw differences by gender.
Okay, thank you. So this study was done between 88 and 94, which is kind of pre-Twitter. And actually the question is, how often do your friends and family come to your home, and how often do you go to their home, and how often do you talk on the phone, and things like that. And those were combined together into one variable in terms of number of contacts. And what was your second question again? I'm sorry. Differences with gender, right. And yes, we did find differences with gender. And in the mortality study, particularly social relationships, which has been shown in other literature as well, have a much greater impact on the mortality of men than of women, actually. Yes?
Thank you.
For the neighbors. Yeah.
But it struck me, and I wondered, and I wanted to get your thoughts on whether you, in the literature, or whether you saw in your own research about differential effects in the neighborhood acting percentage. So if there was a conflict, was it a diverse ethnic group in any one community or neighborhood, and whether that differed in your audience or in your relation to your
community? Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. I wasn't able to look here to see within particular neighborhoods if there were ethnic differences, although there are ethnic differences in the impact. Other literature, though, did show, it was one study in particular by Mario Small that I looked at, where he showed that the differences in health and social integration by race were completely attenuated when you accounted for neighborhood poverty. That was an interesting finding, which definitely went into my thinking when putting this together. Yes?
I wanted to follow up on another question, which mm-hmm. relates to the timing of your study and the recent rise in social media connections mm-hmm. and internet interconnectedness. I'm wondering if it's possible to use a more recent data set to replicate some of the methodology that you've used
yeah.
to examine the effect of that social media and presence in our lives, mm-hmm. given that I think AOL started in something like 1991, and Netscape, if anyone remembers the Netscape browser,
yeah.
that was introduced in 1994.
Yeah.
So you have perfectly captured the moment just before the internet becomes a common factor in American life, and then
yeah.
you can look at a more recent sort of data set at factors that you think would be relevant to the involvement of the internet in our lives. I think that would be really fascinating.
Yeah, I would love to be able to do that. I agree. Thank you. Anyone else? Oh.
Just quickly, mm-hmm. Wondering what empirical researchers have done that looks at how social integration is related to, you mentioned in the beginning, collective efficacy, informal social control, and I'm just curious about what these relationships look like.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, actually. I think that certain measures of social integration, like, you know, contact with neighbors and the neighbors looking out for each other, obviously are part of those measurements, especially as they've been more recently developed, but I don't know if you know how that is, how they relate specifically. Yeah, thank you. Okay, I'm gonna let that go over. Thank you.